Okay, this is Scott Newby Burke with FEX Contracting, and we're doing another interview with an outstanding final expense agent. We've got Travis Tubbs on the line. He's with Equita Final Expense. He's the upline manager and kind of the go-to guy for John Duggar that we interviewed earlier. And Travis and I have known each other for a number of years now. He's always really impressed me. He's probably the most impressive final expense agent I've ever met. Just I would consider him one of my mentors that whenever I get frustrated or have questions that I don't know how to handle, I kind of call Travis up, and he's always a good inspiration for me and a lot of good information. So, Travis, just say hello.
Hey, well, thank you, Scott. Appreciate that.
All right. I guess what I like to do is kind of start at the beginning of what did you do before you got into final expense and how did you get into it?
Sure, yeah. Well, I originally went to school and got a criminal justice degree, worked in the probation field for a few years.
Juvenile delinquents?
Yeah. I don't know, adult delinquents mostly. But
that had to prepare you for this.
Yeah, well. So, and then actually I knew a new guy that owned a car dealership, needed to do some like F&I stuff, so I got working in the car business for some a few years. And really I met a guy in the car business. He was a general manager and really was probably one of the best pure sales people, and just I really learned a lot of just basic things from him, and I never was much of really a, I never thought of myself as a salesman, but like I said, he was probably the best all-around salesperson I've ever met, and really a lot of my success that I've ever had doing any types of sales, I attribute to him and just kind of his teaching. So that's kind of how it started, and I had a friend that was doing, he came to, I seen him when he was an older guy, and telling me about he mails these cards out in the mail, and he was trying to explain to me what he did. We mail these little cards out, and people fill them out and mail them back in. I said, I couldn't comprehend that. I didn't know who in the world would take the time out and do that, or who would fill one of those goofy cards out, And he was showing them to me, so I don't know. And I thought, wow, I bet this is, and I actually rode with him, and I thought, I bet I could do this. And so,
how many years ago was that?
It's probably about eight years ago, eight or so.
Yeah, those cards have been used for years and years, and they just still keep pulling in the leads, don't they?
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's so strange to me that that people would fill those cards out and mail them in.
I have sent some attractive mailers out, full color, real nice detail of what we can do for people, and pictures and credentials and all sorts of stuff, and they just tank. I mean, they don't get much response at all. I mean, the responses you do get are usually good, but you don't get many at all. And I've tried a lot of different ones, and they always just look a lot more professional than those cards. But, man, those cards, you send them out, they're real generic, and they get the responses.
Oh, right, yep. It's amazing. And, a few years ago, you and I, we were, designing our own cards and doing different things. It was fun and interesting. And really what you find out at the end of the day, those little generic cards work as good as anything else. And, you don't really get much more qualified of a lead, design your own lead card or anything, so.
Yeah. It's funny when you said that about learning from a guy in the car business to really start to realize that sales is a profession and not just, people standing there doing, just answering questions, whatever. You really do have a profession that you try to improve everything you do. When I was younger, I worked at a Honda motorcycle dealership and later on was the manager and everything of it. I was always in the sales end of that dealership. And first couple years I was there, we basically just tried to murder the price of our competitors. I mean, that's all we knew to do, and we loved motorcycles. That's why I worked there. I didn't know anything about sales or anything. And Honda sent us to some really high-quality training. They'd always set it up in the winter time when we're sitting there twiddling our thumbs, I guess, to keep us from finding other jobs in the winter. And there was a guy in that profession who was a consultant. He's still in the business, I believe. The guy's name was Gart Sutton and Associates. And, I mean, he was the first guy that I ever noticed that was a professional salesperson. I mean, I never realized that was even a profession before him. And it's funny how when your eyes open up, that a guy who really takes it serious and he tries to improve everything he does, you know, what he's wearing, what he says, the books he reads, the way he presents himself, the way he presents the products and everything, every little detail of what you do can be kind of looked at and improved, and then you do perform, you know, way better than a guy that's just bouncing into customers. And it was a real eye-opener for me. It sounds like that was kind of the same thing you had with that guy. And then once you become a professional salesperson, you know, it doesn't matter what product or industry you're in, you always can have a great career. You know, if you're successful at, you know, I did great with motorcycles, and I've done fantastic with insurance. And it doesn't matter what the product is, if it's something that you believe in and enjoy working with, you know, once you're in sales and really learn what to do, the world is wide open to you.
No, you are 100% right. And I've told this to, you know, my group and friends, and you know, if the government would come out tomorrow, if Obama would come out tomorrow and say, good news, everybody, we're going to pay for everyone's funeral. You know, there's no need for life insurance anymore or burial insurance. I don't know. I wouldn't lose a moment's sleep over that, because I know there's something else I can go in and do that's going to be I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can sell swimming pools. You can sell, you know, anything.
What it is. So, yeah, once you learn that profession, once you are, you know, you have the basics and develop the skills, and you know, you know, what you sell is not really the thing. I'm not, you know, you're not just versed in what you. The final expense, for example, you know, you can do a lot of different things. So,
yeah, just with an insurance itself,
reassure them that, you know, well, we have programs for everybody, and you know, like I said, them thinking that they can't find insurance is sometimes will keep you out of the house or make you do a little bit more legwork to get in.
Okay, so once you got into Final Expense, did you work as a captive agent, or did you start out independent, or how did you get going with that?
Well, you know, when I got into insurance first, I did Medicare supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got in for, you know, about a year and a half, a couple years, you know, and then all of a sudden the Medicare Advantage started coming on. And you know, when I originally got into it, my big goal was to have, you know, $10,000 of renewals, every monthly renewals in Medicare supplement business, you know. That was what I was wanting to build my – and – so then, you know, Medicare Advantage came out, and luckily the IMO I was working with, they were kind of on the cutting edge of that and really ahead of everybody. And at that time, they were, you know, hooked up with Pacificare, and they were the big players, you know, that first year out. And I kind of decided, hey, I don't know, and I live here in Indiana, and it's a big Medicare Advantage state, and I just determined, hey, I'm not going to put a whole big book of business of Medicare supplement and have it all rolled to Medicare Advantage. Who knows what's going to happen, you know? They're talking
right
about taking over, and I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. So that's when I decided to kind of move over into Final Expense. And you know, I worked with some IMOs, but for the most part, I had contracts underneath, you know, different IMOs. But I purchased my own leads, you know. That's how I started out. You know, the guy that originally got me into it, he'd go out and, you know, he'd buy a 1,000-piece mailer, and they'd sprinkle in, and, you know, he'd run them, and then he'd order another 1,000 pieces and wait a few weeks for them to come back. I said, hey, you know what, you need to order these every week, you know. You need to have, you know, a consistent flow of leads, and you know, but some people are scared to do that, and it is scary to do that, you know, because it's the same thing, you know, you're going to be invested hope you get stuff come back. But you know, at the time, you know, returns were good, and so we started doing that. And
back then, a drop was probably about $350, wasn't it?
Yeah. It may have even been less, you know, because when we were buying every week, maybe even down to 320. I don't know. And it worked out pretty well. So that's kind of, you know, I did it kind of what everybody says you should do it, but it's not that easy, really. I mean, it is tough. You know, I'd spend a lot of money in leads. You know, there was one year I spent, you know, it wasn't nothing to spend $45,000 in direct mail.
Yeah, I remember the first time that I talked to, it wasn't you, as your friend. I can't think of his name. I talked to him before I ever met you, and then he kind of...
Yeah, Dan.
And I'd always worked, at to that point, I'd always done funeral pre-need, which we did mailers, but not every week, because we had, you know, people in the funeral homes to follow up with, and we had whole file cabinets full of people that had already pre-planned that had relatives and kids, and, you know, we had a lot of stuff to work other than just our leads that came in. Those were just kind of icing on the cake for us. And then when I started expanding into, you know, beyond funeral pre-need and adding final expense and med subs and things to what I was doing, you know, I wasn't really – that's when I was kind of experimenting with the high-gloss, full-color mailers and stuff and not doing any good with it. And when I talked to Dan for the first time, and he told me how much he was spending every week and all year in leads, and, you know, that's all he had to work was his leads that came in, I thought, oh, my God, that was the scariest thing I ever heard. I mean, it seemed like he was around $60,000 a year he was spending in final expense leads. And I just, you know, I'd never heard of that before. And I thought, oh, man, I can't imagine doing that. But it made perfect sense. It's not a cost. It's just, you know, as long as you're making more than you're spending, it's just a part of doing business. Doesn't matter if it costs, you know, $10,000 a month, as long as you're making $50,000 a month off of it. But, you know, I was like everybody else at that point. I had the money to do it, but I just, you know, laying it out there is a big step.
Absolutely. And not only is it a big, you know, and most of the people get, I mean, I don't know, you know, everybody has their own budget and things, and it's not only a big step for you, you know, it's a big step for your wife and your family, and, I mean, everybody's got to kind of be on board. I mean, if you commit to spending, you know, $700 a week or whatever, you know, in these leads, I mean, I don't know, that's a lot of money, you know, a lot of cash flow for a family or young family or people getting into it or, you know, a lot of times people get into final expense. I mean, they don't say, I'm going to go get my insurance license and sell final expense, and you go to do the test, and, you know, everybody's in there was with a group or somebody. I mean, most of the time they came out of something, and majority of the time they wasn't successful at it. So, you know, cash flow may be an issue or something to do that. Or
well, there are so many ways to go wrong with the leads, too. I guess anytime there's that amount of money changing hands, there's always going to be your quick buck artist on the lead vendor side, and, you know, there's guys that'll try to sell them internet leads that are just total garbage, and people sell them telemarketing leads that aren't worth anything, and then even direct mail vendors that don't drop all the mail. I've had experience with those even in recent times. It's
we kind of got in a little sling with one of the, you know, a lead vendor, you know, and kind of a tight spot, and kind of figured out, hey, this may not be, you know, we kind of learned a lesson, you know, with that. And, you know, when you do that, you kind of got to be aware of what you're doing and who you're doing business with. And so, yeah, there are other variables that you have to kind of figure out when you do that that can make or break you.
Okay, so once you got going in it and you kind of figured out, you know, to buy the leads and run your leads every week and keep them going consistent, have you always used basically the same type of lead, or how much variation do you ever put to those leads?
Well, you know, in the beginning, you know, I guess for the first, you know, obviously I'm with Equina now and they have a standard lead that I run and been running that lead for a number of years. But prior to that, when I was doing my own lead, you know, doing my own mailing, you know, I started out with the generic lead letter. Then I thought, the little green card. And then I thought, hey, I want to found out that they will allow me to make some changes. So, you know, did some different things and some different check boxes and experimented with different things. But for the most part, it's always been the same.
Do you like the lead, the version that has the boxes where you check if you want 5,000, 10,000, 15,000?
Here's the other catch with that is, you know, when I first started out, you know, and you're watching your money and you got a budget and you're trying, you know, you need to make this work. And plus, the other thing, the X factor is, you know, my presentation has evolved and continues to evolve all the time. So my thinking was in the beginning, hey, I want to get, you know, as many back as I can get. You know, I don't, at that point, I wasn't picky as far as, you know, people knowing it was life insurance. I just figured, and that's why I tell other agents, you know, you need to get yourself in a position to give as many presentations as you can, you know, because you're going to blow stuff and mess up, and at least you got to kind of find out your presentation. You know, it's easy to sit down and say, this is how I'm going to do it, but you got to go out enough to where you have something to build off of. You know, there's a story about Jack Nicklaus, the golfer. You know,
yeah.
When he learned how to golf, you know, he's a kid or something, like his grandpa or something, gave him a bucket of balls and said, here, just go out there and hit these balls until you can just try to hit them as long, as straight, as far as you can. So you go out there and you are able to do that. You know, you have some type of a swing or some type of a form, and then you have something to start with. Then you go out there and say, okay, you know, hold your elbow here, put your wrist here. Then you can kind of tweak and change, but you got to have something in place that's consistent that you can make changes.
So your point is you want whatever lead piece gets you the most people to see rather than anything that refines the leads and screens them out a little bit.
Well, if I'm doing my own mailing, right, and starting out, that's what I would do.
If you're paying for your own lead piece, you want it to be the broadest, everybody that you can get to respond, you want them to respond.
Right. I would, if I was new, right. Now, if I was doing it today, I may do it a little different, you know.
In the beginning, you don't have anybody to see, so all you have is your leads. Once you get years into it, you've always got old leads you can rework and referrals and call your clients and all that. You've got more stuff stir up.
You know, and there's always a sliding scale as far as what you want to do and how qualified a lead you want to get in front of or lead you want to receive. Now, obviously, you know, the higher up the scale you go on the quality of a lead, you're going to pay more for it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So depending on where you fall on that scale, you know, if I was brand new and didn't have much money and I really couldn't afford, I'd buy a list, you know, and go see people off the list or make calls off the list.
Just go cold door knock them or call them.
But at some point you figure, I mean, I don't know, you know, obviously I think the first step would be just go out and cold door knock. You know, I can't imagine who would make do that. Next, if you had a little bit of money, you could buy a list. You know, then if you had a little bit more money, you could buy cheap generic mailers, and then the next step would be, hey, I'm going to use a mailer that says life insurance on it. And then, you know, so depending on where you are financially, you know, you can slide up and down that scale. But if I was new and I did have enough money for leads, I would get just the generic leads and try to see as many people as I could and try to develop a presentation that I could work off of and make changes and you know, figure out why people aren't buying off of me, you know, if I'm not making sales.
Yeah. Back to that question, though. When they put those check boxes as far as the amount of coverage, what do you think that does to the lead? Does that get less responses, or what does that do to them?
No, I think it gives less responses. You know, I mailed those for a while, and the best lead you could get back was, you know, we put, you know, we changed the amounts and different things, but, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 or 25,000, I don't know. But somebody would check for 75, somebody would check 7,500. You know, that's a good lead.
Because they kind of know, they know realistically what they're looking for.
Right. Well, they probably know it costs money. It's not free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that check $25 box, you know, they probably think,
yeah,
benefit or something.
They're thinking, why didn't everybody want 25? It's free.
Yeah, so if I was running the lead, I would always run those first. I always thought, you know, and still do, those are the best leads because I think that those people understand what the heck it is.
What color card do you like best?
You know, I did, most of the ones I did were green and yellow. And I think now, I don't know, I think they used to give you a lot more selection back when I used to do it. I think now they don't give you as much selection.
They let you, some of the places let you choose a lot of different colors. I'm kind of surprised. Now, you guys mainly do pink ones, don't you?
Yep, I did pink ones, yellow ones. The ones I do now are pink, yeah.
First time I saw pink ones, I thought, well, that's got to be the worst choice, but they must be something to it, or Equita wouldn't use it, would they?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know what it is or if it sticks out or what it is, but there must be a reason they use them. But
I mean, they've certainly tested it.
That's
why you can't just go by your instincts. You got to test things, because I would never choose pink. You know, I would always think that that'd be the worst color to use. And
you know, obviously they drop a lot of mail, and they're able to track the response and returns. And I'm sure, you know, I know they've mailed different colors, and for whatever reason, I don't think anybody can really say why, but I think that pink does pretty well for them, so that's why they stay with it.
Yeah. Okay, so when you get the lead card in, and we've talked enough to know that you don't just go door knock your leads. You call them and set appointments. And you do it kind of like what John Duggar does, where you set appointments one day and then go see them the next, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you approach it when you call them on the phone? What do you say?
Yeah, I don't know how much of this stuff you want to go into or what, but, you know, I'll just call them and tell them that I'm the guy, I received the card they mailed in, you know, about the final expense life insurance program to supplement their government death benefits, and you know, I'm the guy that takes care of that in their area, and you know, and I need to get the information to them, and I'm going to be there tomorrow, and then I'll just set up a time, and I'll give them a time in the morning or afternoon, or and then go from there. I don't really have any problems doing the appointment setting. I used to hate it. I mean, when I first got into business, I used to dread it and get all worked up and hate it. You know, after you make the first call, it's okay. But now, I mean, it's no big deal now. It goes pretty easy. I don't, you know, people ask all the time, and I know John tried to explain it, but I don't really have people, I don't lose too many. Now, I do have some people that don't want it or whatever, but that's okay. I pitch it. Like I said, it still works out well.
Well, don't you have a lot of them, especially more so the last couple of years, that you know, they got caller ID and all this stuff, and they just won't answer their phone?
Well, yeah, I have some of that. But you know what? One thing I have is people call me back. And I don't, you know, I get a lot of that here lately. You know, with cell phones, most people have cell phones nowadays.
Yeah, that's kind of the standard way of answering a phone in Kentucky. We joke about that, but nobody answers their phone. You have to call them, not leave a message, and then they call you back like 3 minutes later.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know. I don't understand it. Yeah, that happens. I mean, it happens all the time, and more and more and more. It seems like every month I get that. So, you know, it depends. I'll call from my office or you know, if I'm on the road, I'm trying, you know, I need to set appointments for the next day, or if I'm out and I call my cell phone, you know, my cell phone starts ringing. I mean, I've had my phone ring at midnight, 1 in the morning. People call me back. I was like, you know, because, you know, they've seen my phone number show up on their caller ID, and they're trying to figure out, drives them crazy.
Yeah. It's good that they're curious. At least they get
right
back in touch with you. It's kind of like hanging those stickers on the doors that you've got something for them.
Drives them crazy.
So go through that one more time. Like when you make the call, and what percent would you say when you sit down with, what do you take, 15 or 20 leads a week?
Yeah.
Okay, when you sit down Monday morning, what time do you start calling?
Well, you know, I do mine a little different. I call Saturday morning and set my appointments up for Monday. That's why I go through the first time.
Okay, what time Saturday morning do you start?
I'd say around 9:30, sometime between 9:30 and 10.
Okay, and then when you take your first pass through and you've got 20 leads, how many people are you going to get to answer their phone on your first pass through those 20 leads?
Well, you know, it varies. Sometimes I'll have, you know, the first 8 answer, and I'll have 8 appointments and be done. You know, other times it just depends on the area, you know, that's where I'm at, you know, the time of the year. It's like it varies a little bit. I don't know. I always tell it doesn't matter how many times I got to go through them. I'm going to do it until I get my lead set. You know, I'm prepared to call till noon if I need to, you know. I understand that the most important thing for me at that time is to set my appointments for Monday. And without appointments on Monday, I'm not going to
have nothing to do. Now, your goal is 8 appointments Monday, and you set them, what, an hour apart?
Right. I used to do 12. I used to try to set them from 9 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. And I used to do, I mean, that's how I always did it. I don't hear, but you can't do that pretty much anymore. Back then we had, you know, companies that didn't require phone interviews. You know, the companies I use nowadays, they have phone interviews, so it's tough to do that. But, and plus, I don't want to stay out that, you know, that was, I have a daughter now and things, so I don't want to work that late.
Now, you guys have Americo and Manuela, don't you?
Yeah, I use them. I have them, but I don't write them.
They're not your favorites?
No, I've taken Americo out of my bag. I don't really care for them much.
I've tried to like them. I just don't have great luck with them. It seems
they're horrible. I mean, this is my opinion, but I don't like them. They're hard to deal with. They're goofy. You can't really get a good understanding of their underwriting. And I don't like them, you know. And I always tell my people, I write Royal Neighbors. That's who I write.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Royal Neighbors. There's a lot of value with Royal Neighbors. And I'm not doing a Royal Neighbors commercial or anything like that. I'm just, you want to call me and ask me what I do, I'm telling you. I write Royal Neighbors. And they do a phone interview. And there's huge value to me because I like being able to tell people, you know, give them the thumbs up. You know, hey, congratulations, Mildred, you're approved, you know.
That's what I've always liked that in all the companies that have point of sale interviews and point of sale approval. That to me, that is huge, because
right?
I don't want to find out a week later that this person got graded instead of preferred, and they have to go back and try to resell it. I've got a lady I'm going to see tomorrow that I've, you know, had to go 3 times because she is kind of one of the hard to place people, and finally she's just going to go ahead and do a funeral pre-need because she's tired of messing and getting turn downs. But, you know, if I could have put her with a company that would tell us immediately, it would have been much more comfortable. Well, I had to try her with ones because of her health that they take 4 or 5 days to tell you an answer. That's frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating, you know, and I don't – I have other reasons, you know. I like, you know, and I don't Monumental too, same way that, you know, they got a 8-page application and who knows, I don't know. And I don't write enough of them to really – know the ins and outs or everything and fool with them. And, you know, and I don't know. They call the same thing with, you know, and they try to say they don't. We had them on the phone a couple weeks ago, and, you know, they only call maybe 1 out of 10. And I swear, every application I've ever submitted with them, they've called later and done a phone interview.
Yeah, they do quite a few.
They do a lot, but I'll tell you, though, if you get one of their goofy marketers on the phone and they're trying to convince you to write their business, they tell you they don't do hardly any.
Yeah.
But it hadn't been my experience. And
they're about the only company that I like enough that I put up with the no-phone interview thing. You know, if I didn't like them as well as I do, I wouldn't write them because of the no-phone interview, but that's the one company that doesn't do them that I do feel like I have a good handle on their underwriting, and I like the company pretty good. And around our area, they're real well known. I mean, that's a name that when you say it, people know who it is. And I like, you know, that helps somewhat. They actually bought Commonwealth of Kentucky, which was in every house in the state of Kentucky, and a lot of them here in southern Indiana. And, you know, when that happened and everybody just figured, well, Commonwealth just changed their name to Monumental. They didn't even realize they got bought, but they still think of them as Commonwealth, and they're all comfortable with them. So, I mean, that's a company that I put up with the no-phone interview thing with them, and there's not many other companies that I do.
Yeah, it makes it tougher, and I don't, you know, these people are hard enough to get a hold of the first time. You know, and it always seems like if you got to go back, and I don't know, it just never works out, and it just, I don't know, I don't like taking my time out. I like to go out. I'd rather spend an extra 5 minutes with them then while I've got them there and be done with it, you know, and walk away and know that there's no variable or anything, I'm going to have to come back and see him, and I can go on and enjoy my life and do other things. So,
okay,
that's why I like Royal Neighbors. And, you know, the other thing, too, I don't know. I'm not doing the commercial, but for me, you know, I do a lot of business with Rural Neighbors. I mean, that's probably 80% of the business I write is I put with Rural Neighbors. I know every underwriter by name. They know me by name.
Yeah.
I think there's value when you do business with a lot, when you, you know, there's different schools of thought, but my opinion is, I don't know, I know I've got things pushed through that most people wouldn't have got pushed through because I do a lot of business with them. I have a relationship with them. And I don't know if you could ever write enough business with AmeriCo or Monumental that you would ever be in that position to have those benefits. You know what I mean? They just, to me, those companies seem so stale and so not very personable and really, you know, like Foresters, you know. Good Lord, I don't write them anymore, but in the same way. I mean, I wrote a ton of business with them, you know, went on a convention, and I wasn't going to get anything extra than a guy that submitted, you know, one app a year.
Yeah, that's Foresters was a tough one for me. I never had any good customer service experiences with them, and I just quit using them pretty early into that. Yeah, some of those companies are pretty big and impersonal. So once you've got to where there's a real comfort level with a company and the people know you when you call and you're not trying to explain who you are, and yeah, I write a little bit of business with you guys.
No, yeah, and I think there's value in that, and there's a lot of value in that. So I don't know. That's just my – I like knowing I can leave there. It's a great product, good price, you know, and if things change, I'll find another company. You know, I'll sit down. You know, and that's the other thing, you know. You talk about the message boards and you know, people that get upset if they can't do business with this company. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. If I can't sell this company for 6 months, I'm going to go get a job delivering pizzas. You know, they think they're out of the business.
Yeah, Rural Neighbors called me tomorrow. We're not going to take any more final expense. I was, okay, great. I mean, well, it was fun while it lasted, you know. And
yeah.
I'd find somebody new. There's so, and what that is, it's a huge tell on the people and you know, really how they're going to be successful. I mean, they're really not problem solvers or haven't really accepted this as a profession. And like I said, you know, that's the key to being successful.
That's right. Go through one more time with me. When you call the leads, you just got the lead card in, you're sitting down making your calls, kind of go through like you just dialed a number and someone answered, and what do you say on that lead card to set the appointment?
Yeah, well, I'll tell them, you know, that I'll introduce myself, you know, this is Travis Tubbs. I'm calling because I work for the Senior Benefit Services. I received the card that you mailed in to us. You're requesting the information about the new final expense life insurance programs that would supplement your government death benefits. You know, do you remember mailing that card in? You know.
Yeah, I remember the card.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, I'm actually the guy who takes care of that in your county, whatever it is, and I need to set aside just a couple minutes with you tomorrow.
Hey, hold on here. I thought you were just going to mail me something.
Yeah, well, actually, no. Unfortunately, I'm only eligible to provide you the information you qualify for. It takes just a couple minutes. I wish we could mail it, but like I said, it just takes a couple minutes to figure out what it is you qualify for. I have time in the morning around 10 or 11, or I can see in the afternoon maybe around 2 or 3.
Okay, now let's say, yeah, I'm trying to give you the things that we really run into. When you get the ones that say, if you can't mail it, then I'm not interested. I mean, you have to get that fairly often, don't you?
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing, I do it at the door. You know, if they're going to be on the phone with me and we're having a dialogue, we're still talking, I'm not the first one to hang up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk, you know, to set the appointment. You know, my goal is to set the appointment. Well, yeah, you know, Scott, I wish we could mail that out, and I'm sorry you thought that, but unfortunately they only allow me to, you know, provide you the information that you are eligible to receive, and that's why it takes a few minutes. I need to come out and see it to determine what that information is, and then, you know, you can do the rest of it through the mail or whatever you want to do with it. But, you know,
of the ones that go that path where they're telling you, if you can't mail it, I'm not interested, forget it. How many of those can you rescue? Can you pull them out of that?
Some, but you have some people that are adamant, you know, that they can't be saved. You know, it's all in the way you deliver it and your confidence on the phone, and that's the key, you know. I don't know, you catch me at 10 o'clock at night, I'm not in my...
Not in your prime.
...setting mode, but yeah, you know, hey, you know, my name's Travis Stubbs. I'm with the Senior Benefit Services. You had mailed the card in to us. We received last week. You remember about the programs to supplement your government death benefits, you know, the final expense life insurance programs? Yeah, I remember doing that. Okay, great. Well, I'm the guy who takes care of that in, you know, Vandenberg County. And I'm going to actually be over there tomorrow, and I need to set aside just a couple minutes. I can get you the information that you're qualified to receive. I have time in the morning or afternoon. Which one would be better for you? You know, or given the times, it just depends on. I kind of go off what they say, and they say, "Well, I thought you'd mail it." You know, well, I wish we could, but unfortunately, they only allow me to provide the information to you that you can qualify for. So that's what I need to do. And like I said, I'm going to be coming over there, all the way from where Bloomington or what, you know, what would work out better for you in the morning or afternoon. You know, and if they come back, I don't know. I guess I thought you'd mail it. Well, I'm gonna keep talking to them. I'm gonna say I'll just, you know, address it a little bit and go back and try to set the appointment. You know, if they're gonna sit there and, you know, at some point they're gonna hang up.
Right.
At that point, I'll throw the lead away or whatever. But if you're still engaging me in the conversation, I got a shot. At
you keep going. Now, okay, let's say they throw you the other thing that you run into. Tomorrow's not good. I'm working tomorrow.
Okay. Well, what time do you go? What time do you go into work?
I go at 7:30.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be there all day. What time are you getting off tomorrow?
Well, I don't know. I usually work till about 6, and then I got to go see my sister. Okay. You know, they throw you these all-day curves.
Right. And I say, well, okay, is there any way that maybe I could meet with you before you go see your sister? No, you know, whatever. I say, well, okay, well, I may be back over there on Wednesday. What's your schedule look like for Wednesday? You know, well, Wednesday's a better day or what, you know, I don't know.
So now let's say that, you know, you're setting appointments for Monday and they, you know, do show some interest, but they're off on Thursday. I mean, do you go ahead and set the appointment that far out? Because John Duggar says that he doesn't. He tells them, well, I'll call you Wednesday if I can – fit you in for Thursday, but I'm not, you know, he doesn't set the appointment for Thursday, even if they're willing to. Do you kind of go with that hardline approach, or do you go ahead and set a Thursday appointment?
No, well, I don't go on a date that I'm not, I don't make a special trip or anything, you know. If it's going to be a date, because I know going Saturday, I know the days I'm going to work run appointments, you know. So if it's going to be a day, I know the areas I'm going to work. So if it is going to be a day that I'm going to be in that area, I'll say, okay, well, you know, Thursday be better for you. Well, yeah, that'd be better. Okay, well, are you working on Thursday? You want to be home? Or, you know, and most times if they're home all day, I'll go ahead and roll the dice if they're going to be there. I'll go ahead and set the appointment and say, okay, well, all right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put you down for 4 o'clock on Thursday. So make sure you write that down.
Now, do you set specific appointment times, or are you kind of like the cable TV guys where you say, I'll be there between noon and 5 o'clock?
No, you know what? I try to set specific times, but sometimes, a lot of times I'll call and people will say, oh, it doesn't matter to me, I'll be home all day. I say, okay, well, with the morning, and we can put down that, or I'll tell them, depending on what my schedule looks like, I'll tell them, I'll just put you down sometime in the afternoon. You're going to be, I'll be home all day. So I'll put that down as a p.m. appointment, and that way, you know, if that 4 o'clock that I set, that 4 o'clock Thursday appointment that I set on Monday is not there, then I'll just go see that p.m. person. I'll work them in if I get a no-show. But it seems like, you know, they say, it doesn't matter to me, I'll be home all day. You know, then I'll put them down as an a.m. or p.m.
As a flexible appointment.
Right, right.
Hold on 1 second, Travis. I want to do a break on this tape here.